WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Americans have been so busy keeping up with the elections that many of us have lost track of what's happening in Bosnia. Last week, the Clinton administration announced it will no longer participate in NATO's enforcement of the arms embargo against the Muslim-led Bosnian government. Congress had already voted to cut off all funds for enforcing the ban as of today if the Serbs had not agreed to a peace accord. America's withdrawal can affect the course of the war and the future of NATO. My guest, Misha Glenny, is a British journalist who has been covering the war in the Balkans since it began. He's a former BBC correspondent and author of the book The Fall of Yugoslavia. I asked Glenny about the significance of America's action.
It's very important symbolically, this cessation of the monitoring of the embargo, but it does not mean a great deal in practical terms. It simply means that those American ships, if they find arms bound apparently for Bosnia, except, as they point out, for heavy weaponry, missile systems and so on, they will just turn a blind eye and let it go. But then that ship carrying those weapons will soon run into a British or a French vessel carrying out the same job, and the British and the French vessel will prevent the ship from unloading its cargo. So nothing will happen practically. I don't think that the Bosnian Muslims will be getting any more weapons than they are now, although, of course, they have been getting a lot of weapons overland for quite a long time. They've been supplied by the Iranian government. They have been supplied through Slovenia with the help of Croatia from some countries, weapons from some countries in Eastern Europe, from some countries in Central Europe. There have even been accusations, which have not been substantiated, that the Americans have actually been encouraging and turning a blind eye to this for a long time. But at the moment, there is no proof that that is the case.
Why has the United States pulled out of military enforcement of the blockade?
Well, I think President Clinton has made it fairly clear that he has pulled out because of congressional pressure. There has obviously been considerable congressional pressure, and indeed from within his own administration, to lift the arms embargo on the Bosnian government. Now, if you see what President Clinton has said about lifting of the arms embargo over the past, say, 6 to 9 months, it becomes fairly clear that the president himself has no desire whatsoever to lift the embargo. Although he sticks with the rhetoric of lifting the embargo, when it actually comes to saying, right, we're going to do it, there's always a sort of stalling clause in that statement. And so he puts it back and back. The reason for this is very clear, and he does point this out fairly obviously, is that if he were to lift the arms embargo unilaterally, not only would he be breaking the consensus politics of NATO, thus creating considerable tension between the United States and its allies in Europe, but he would be busting wide open a United Nations Security Council resolution. Now, that means very serious problems with the Russians over a whole range of issues. If you bust the Bosnian arms embargo resolution, then the Russians will come back to you and say, okay, no ball with Iraq, no, we're not going to play ball with Haiti. In fact, we're going to, if you're going to flout the UN Security Council, then we too will ensure that there will be no cooperation in the one body which can coordinate to a degree international policy.
You think there are countries that are afraid that the United States will be starting a bad precedent by unilaterally breaking an agreement?
Oh, I think that it would have tremendous consequences for international relations in the post-Cold War period. And for that reason, I think that President Clinton is trying to avoid everything to do it, including making concessions like the cessation of monitoring the embargo so that he can go back to Congress and say, well, you know, it really is a bit tough for us to lift the arms embargo unilaterally, but I have at least ensured that we're no longer we're no longer monitoring it, and so we're sort of cleaning our hands to an extent from the embargo. But, you know, if for any reason he were to succumb to that congressional pressure and lift the arms embargo unilaterally, then we would be entering into an extremely different world, diplomatically, politically, and possibly even militarily.
What has NATO reaction been to the American plan to stop enforcing the arms embargo?
Well, the European allies of the United States in Europe reacted to the announcement with extreme concern. I think part of the reason they reacted so nervously and expressing such worry about this was because they found out about it through a story leaked to the New York Times, i.e. they had not been briefed on it, on what is for them an extremely important issue, by the United States government. So they felt that insulted. But behind it, the concern is based upon the fact that NATO isn't really sure what it's meant to be doing in the post-Cold War world. Before 1989, before the Soviet Union and Eastern and the communist regimes in Eastern Europe's collapse, it was perfectly obvious what NATO was there for. It was to ensure security for the Western alliance. But now there are real divisions between, not just between the European members of NATO and the United States, but within the European members of NATO as well, as to what NATO should be doing, what its function should be doing. Should it be working out of area, that is, going into places like Bosnia and sorting things out with its superior military equipment? Should it be restricted to its original role of just defending NATO countries? Should it be expanding into Eastern Europe and taking on extra duties, securing the borders of other countries? What should it be doing? And instead of actually coming up with a coherent strategy for NATO, we are beginning to see divisions between the members of NATO as we have never seen before. And the Europeans panicked at the news that the Americans were stopping participating in this, because they felt that it was the first step on the road to a collapse of NATO. Now, this is probably exaggerated. I'm sure it's exaggerated, but it was very striking. I was monitoring all the European press when the announcement was made. It was very striking to see how there was a unanimous response in Paris, London, and Bonn to the American move, saying that this was unacceptable, and it concerned them greatly that the whole alliance was now being questioned. That reaction collapsed, sort of became milder after 2 days or so, once the Europeans had swallowed it. But it does raise a very serious question about NATO.
Journalist Misha Glenny is my guest. He's been covering the war in the Balkans since it began. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about America's withdrawal from the enforcement of the arms embargo against the Bosnian government. My guest is journalist Misha Glenny. This month, the General Assembly at the UN adopted a resolution urging the Security Council to exempt the Muslim-led Bosnian government from the arms embargo. And that passed 97-0. There were 61 abstentions. What weight does this carry? What's the significance of that vote?
None whatsoever in practical terms. A General Assembly resolution is not binding. It's only the Security Council that can lift that embargo. And it clearly expresses that around the world there are a lot of countries, particularly in the Islamic world, but also friends of the United States in various places, who feel that they cannot tolerate this embargo for moral reasons. However, those 61 exemptions included a lot of Europeans, and although it's quite understandable why the Islamic countries and indeed the United States find the embargo so difficult to accept on moral grounds, this is a war that is going on in Europe. European countries on the whole have troops stationed there, and should the war get out of hand, i.e. expand from Bosnia back into Croatia, between Serbia and Croatia, and then possibly down into the south of the Balkans, it is Europe which has to pick up the tab, and that would be a tab, a bill which would be rising exponentially a massive increase, an escalation of the war from Bosnia-Herzegovina into other parts of the Balkans means that the north and the south of Europe are disconnected territorially by land. So I think that Europe considers anything which endangers the stability of the broader area of southeastern Europe simply unacceptable, particularly since the Europeans, the British, the French, the Spanish, the Dutch have troops in the middle of all this who are likely to be victims in the end, in the event of an escalation.
I may be wrong here, but it's my impression that a lot of Americans are losing interest in Bosnia and are losing track of what's happening there. On the other hand, you've been just immersed in this right from the start. And I wonder if you feel interest slipping away. Not yours, but other people's.
Well,
other people's,
you know,
as far away as here.
On occasions, I mean, you know, even my interest slips because you just, it becomes so despairing. But I mean, you know, not just in the United States, but in other parts of Europe as well. On those occasions when I travel to my native London, which I do about once every 6 months, I'm absolutely staggered by the lack of interest, indeed the ignorance about what's going on in the Balkans. For really quite, it's quite shattering when I see that there is not a great deal of interest. And the same is true here. This is partly because of overkill in the media, and partly, you know, the sort of boredom syndrome, which always happens when wars and conflicts are sort of mesmerically difficult to understand, and all you see on television is repeated, you know, scenes of violence and dead bodies and so on. So that's a normal state of affairs. I always try and explain to people that it's important that we keep interested in this topic and in this war, partly because the way that this war has been fought is unimaginable. I can't think of any war in the post-Second World War period where so much heavy artillery has been used against civilians to such a degree as it has here. So from a humanitarian point of view, we ought to be interested in it. But in a political view, well, let me tell you a little story. When I was recently in Skopje, in what is known officially as the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, whose security is still under a great deal of threat. It's a state which has no defence, which historically the four countries surrounding it have territorial claims over it. And are at the moment involved in various types of diplomatic and political intimidation against this country. And all the same, these people are trying to sort of encourage investment in the country and try and get people in Europe and the United States interested in Macedonia, partly in order to ensure that a war won't break out there. And they produced a little sort of tourist come business investment leaflet, which was entitled brightly on the front, "Interested in Macedonia?" And this was a sort of huge poster in the tourist office I went to, and somebody had scrawled underneath, "You will be if you don't watch out." and that is what this war is about. This war can shatter southeastern Europe, can shatter the security of southern Europe, and have tremendous implications for the entire post-Cold War order, because Europe is one of the three great economic centres of the world, and a destabilisation of Europe is in nobody's interest.
Do the pressures ever get to you of being so closely covering the war for so long?
Well, I do get tired of it. I mean, the thing that's bothering me at the moment is I get slagged off by everyone, and I really shouldn't be worried about it. But
what do you mean slagged off?
Slagged off, sorry, that's a quaint old British phrase. That everybody attacks me. The Croats attack me because they say I'm a Chetnik, i.e. a sort of Serb militia. The Serbs say that, the Bosnian Serbs say that, you know, I'm too sympathetic to the Muslims. The Muslims say I'm a traitor because I oppose the lifting of the arms embargo. The Bulgarians recently, a newspaper in Bulgaria, wrote an article saying that I was working for the Greek intelligence service at the same time as I was being denounced on Greek radio for a piece I did for the New York Times, which they had translated, and claiming that I was abusing Greek hospitality by living in their country and writing untruths and so on against their country. And this happens wherever I go. Everyone hates me. This happens to, not just to me, but to other people as well. But after a while, you begin to find it really hard to take with the war, with the sort of emotional stress that goes with it, and you know, just the travelling. I travel the whole time, and I spend my whole time thinking about this thing. You know, and I work 7 days a week on this. I had a holiday for about 5 or 6 days this summer. It's all my own fault. I mean, I could take off more time if I want to, but I'm just kind of obsessed by it. And so in that sense, you know, I've had it. And I think sometime soon I'm going to have to distance myself from it physically, or I'm just going to go around the bend, basically.
Well, I hope you take care of yourself. And I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Terry.
Misha Glenny is the author of The Fall of Yugoslavia. This is Fresh Air.